You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
So a company called TRM Labs put out a cryptocurrency report that suggests that since last year, or since June of last year to June of this year, there have been more than double the amount of crypto hacks that we saw in 2023. So in 2023, we had about $657 million worth of crypto that was stolen as a result of hacking activities. And this year, ending June 2024, that number's gone up to 1.38 billion. I'm joined on the line by head of growth at Valor, that is Blake Player, to take a look at this and try and understand what's happening. Good evening, Blake. Thanks so much for taking the time. How are we at this point? I thought cryptos were supposed to be the safe ecosystem.
Yeah, good evening. Thanks for having me on the call. So I think what we're talking about here is actually just general cybercrime, which crypto is not uniquely exposed to. You'll find that most industries, or in fact all industries, are subject to cybercrime. And while that number does seem quite big for crypto, there is, you know, a much bigger number out there that is generally the cost of cybercrime across all industries. I was reading a report recently in terms of ransomware, and I think at the moment ransomware is costing companies globally more than $20 billion per year, and that's just one sort of degree of cyber threat. So certainly this is something that happens. There are security risks in every industry, and crypto is particularly, I suppose, prone to this because of the nature of cryptocurrency being generally not, it's immutable. Once money's been sent, you're not able to reverse the transactions, which can sometimes happen in the traditional space. So there is that additional risk there, but it's certainly not a unique thing to crypto.
I suppose a part of that, as you rightly mentioned, is the fact that while it's not unique to crypto, crypto is the newest, and so the numbers are increasing, and so a jump from year one to year two kind of might look bigger than in other years. Blake, I want to look at the fact that a lot of the crimes, or a lot of the targeting, seems to be geared more towards the service providers and the platform providers and the exchanges, and not so much towards private individuals. Is it because the exchanges sort of consolidate more crypto, and therefore hackers might think there is more for them to access there?
Yeah, so I do think that individuals are certainly targeted. There's lots of, you know, prominent crypto personalities that have been hacked, and including Vitalik, who's the founder of, or creator of, Ethereum himself. So there is a number of individual attacks, but you are right in that large exchanges and other crypto businesses who hold a lot of crypto are a big target, just because if you do manage to get in, the payoff is quite high, whereas with an individual, typically the payoff can be quite low. But that's not always true, and often the individuals are much easier to compromise. The security is often a lot less, you know, stringent, and people tend to do things like reuse passwords or not use 2FAs, and we see a lot of that type of activity. In terms of exchanges, most exchanges, or at least those that are out there, have very, very tight security, and whole teams like Valor dedicated to ensuring cybersecurity. So it is very difficult to compromise an exchange. Not to say it's impossible, but it is a high priority for any crypto business, and you'll find that you know, most credible exchanges out there are doing a huge amount and spending huge resources to maintain security. So certainly an attractive target, but also a more difficult one.
Blake, would you say a lot of these developments, or a lot of these hacking incidences, are as a result of wanting to look at things like financing illicit activities and all of that? There's been obviously reports from the United Nations, as well as from the US themselves, that countries like North Korea are using crypto to finance their nuclear weapons and all of that. Is it just in general that we're seeing the fact that decentralized ecosystems like cryptocurrencies and blockchain are becoming more popular, or is it more that people want someone to blame and crypto might be the convenient place to blame?
Yeah, look, I think there's always, if you look at any new technology, there's always people who will sort of look at only the negative parts of it, and you know, people don't like change. It was, you know, people weren't very happy when cell phones first came out, or when the internet first came out. There was huge campaigns to stop people from doing business on the internet, because, you know, how can you trust somebody that's selling something online? So this is not a unique phenomenon. I think generally people are hesitant to change, and particularly when it comes to money, it's something that people are nervous about. So I do think that a lot of the downsides tend to get overemphasized in the crypto space, and the positives, or the great advances that crypto has made from a financial technology perspective, often are a bit underplayed in traditional media, at least. So I do think obviously that there are some properties of crypto that make it more, I suppose, attractive for use cases in certain activities, like what you see with North Korea, or certain terrorist groups that do tend to use it because of this nature of it not really being able to be seized or stopped. But that's a very small percentage of overall crypto activity. There's a much bigger market out there doing a lot more interesting things. So I wouldn't spend too much time focusing on that part, but rather on the part that is really changing the world and making a difference in financial infrastructure.
Blake, would you say holding your crypto in a hard wallet is still probably one of the safest methods that individuals can use to protect their cryptos?
It is certainly one of the ways you can protect your crypto, not necessarily the safest. I think it really depends on who you are and how technically or how sophisticated you are, and the way that you go about doing it. It could easily be as dangerous as storing it somewhere else with a central custodian. With the hard wallet, you've got to secure your own keys. So as an example, if I use a Ledger or a Trezor, which are two of the most popular, when I set up that wallet, I get a private key, which is represented as a seed phrase. Now, I've got to store that seed phrase somewhere, or I've got to remember it. And what a lot of people do is, they're told that, you've got to hold your own crypto, and that is true. It is a generally safe way if you do things properly. But often people lose these seeds, or they keep them in an unencrypted form, in their email or in some other unsecure place. And then they get compromised because they've reused a password somewhere, and then suddenly they lose all their crypto. Now, that could be avoided if you're not sure about how to securely store these seeds by trusting a central custodian. But of course, you then, you're moving towards trusting somebody else to do it better than you can. So I suppose the question people need to answer is whether they think that your custodian can do a better job of securing the crypto than you can. And in that case, it might be a better choice to use a custodian like Vala or the many that are out there. But if you do back yourself and you know what you're doing, holding it on a hardware wallet is not a better decision.
While we're on the topic of custodians, Blake, I want to look at obviously the importance of the correct custodians. The FSCA has been very clear, and we've had them on the show, around the crypto asset service providers' licenses. How important is it to hold your crypto with a provider that is licensed? And I say this because I know Vala has a license. I know you've got your CASP license for Category 1 and 2, and it's always good to see that there are players in the industry that are wanting to participate wanting to play by the rules.
Yeah, that is true. Vala is a licensed financial service provider, so we were awarded a CASP license earlier this year. And certainly if you are in South Africa, it does help a lot to store and work with licensed crypto providers, because you do have more recourse in the event that something goes wrong. You know that there has been a comprehensive process that has gone through that crypto service provider's policies, how they do storage and custody, and that the operators behind that exchange are legitimate people and business people that are doing the right thing. So I think the licensing regime does provide confidence to people who, when you first join up and sign up with a crypto exchange, it's very difficult to tell, whether you can trust it. So the licensing does provide a layer of additional trust. That being said, we always do recommend that people should always do their own research and homework on the exchanges that they use, and particularly the crypto providers. Of course, it's particularly in South Africa, it would be important to make sure you're dealing with somebody who's licensed, because not only is there a chance if they're unlicensed that they get shut down by the regulator, but you're just not sure who's behind and operating that exchange or service provider that could be a bad actor if they haven't managed to go through the licensing process.
25 billion rands worth of crypto stolen in 2024. Be sure you're dealing with the right service providers. Be sure you're dealing with licensed entities. And be sure you do your research. Thanks so much for those insights, Blake. That's Blake Player, who is the head of growth at Vala, joining me to reflect on the increase in crypto hacking.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.